Penny Hinn now there is the MP for Tāmaki Makaurau and also the Forestry Minister. A couple of things to talk about there too. Thanks for your time, Penny. Tēnā koe.
Kia ora, Dale. Kia ora, tātou.
What's been the highlight of your week before we get into this stuff and the week ahead as well, e hoa?
Oh, look, I think the highlight of the week has definitely been, there are so many, but it's definitely been the attendance at the field days down in Kirikiriroa. I think it's been one of those kaupapa where quite often many forget that Māori are so heavily involved in ahu whenua, forestry, agriculture, primary industries, and to get along and to see a large Māori contingent there representing right across the primary sector. You know, we are some of the best farmers in this country, we're some of the best growers in this country, and to continue to see those Māori voices and faces coming through in that space was really a treat to see on Wednesday. But if there was a second place prize, it would be the Waiariki Ngāti Whakaue Wellness Tourism Centre that was opened yesterday by myself and the Prime Minister and Minister Kiritapu Allen. It was great to see an iwi-led kaupapa that will see high net worth visitors come to Aotearoa and also domestic visitors to visit this resort and spa to be able to enjoy wellness tourism, which I understand is a $1 trillion industry worldwide. And that's a good thing as a tourism minister. I'm definitely happy about that.
Couple of things. Is it true that all Māori farmers vote National?
Well, and you know my whakapapa, Dale. Many of I come from farming whānau and a farming valley where a lot of them supported National. In fact, at one point in time, I think we were the bluest Māori valley in the country. But no, that's not necessarily the case. And what we've seen across those who are involved in ahu whenua and in farming is when most people think about farming, they simply think about milking cows. Well, the truth is that Māori ahu whenua organisations and trusts and iwi around the country have been innovating in this space for a long time. So it's not just about dairy cows. It's not just about beef or sheep. They're doing some amazing things with land utilisation across forestry, harvesting of geothermal, growing primary products, investing in fruits and other things like blueberries and kiwi fruit. It's just phenomenal to see where Māori are involved, and it's truly right across the entire spectrum.
Tēnā koe. Let's talk some pine issues. Forestry gangs are reporting contractors folding, but who's going to do the work to manage the forests already, and who are going to clean up the mess? Is this something that you've heard too?
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And obviously, being at the field days on Wednesday, I caught up with a number of those who are contractors and those who represent contractors. And if you imagine a value chain or a hierarchy, if you like, you've got forest owners at one end, and then right at the other end are those contractors who do the mahi, literally on the ground. And what happens in forestry is rather complex, whereby if government sets a direction, it takes some time and it has an impact on different spaces of that value chain. What we're seeing is that many forests are holding back off harvesting at the moment because of low prices and low value in logs and exporting offshore. So that's obviously a clear concern for those who are contracting, and I've heard it loud and clear. We're trying to look towards how we might utilise those contractors across other spaces while we hold and prepare for harvesting forests themselves. For example, if you're harvesting a forest in a remote block in Te Tai Tokero or Tai Rāwhiti, you know, a lot of that machinery and transferable skills can be used for some of the infrastructure work that's required. And most forestry gang and forestry contractors will know that they're actually not just there to cut down the trees. Many of them build the roads that allow us to access many parts of the forest. So we're looking at ways to see how we might use those transferable skills in order to keep those people engaged. But I will acknowledge it's a difficult time out there for contractors.
Yeah, thank you. Look, I spoke yesterday with Donna Kerridge, and there's a lot of nervousness and frustration. Some are infuriated, actually, that Aotearoa Māori is being compromised in the new therapeutic products bill. and that what's proposed falls far short of the rangatiratanga discussed in the Y262 claim on indigenous fauna and flora. You know that that claim has almost been pushed to the back of the queue or to the too hard basket, but it does discuss Māori rights to our taonga left to us by our old people. And it's being compromised, according to those working in the field, particularly those who are small-scale manufacturers of natural health products and rōa practitioners, that the new bill compromises and doesn't treat respectfully the areas that they are working in. What's your take on this, please?
Oh, look, I'm going to be upfront and say I disagree with the characterization that what's happening with the bill at the moment and the recent announcement that the government has made with respect to rongoā Māori. I want to be very clear to the whānau. Removing rongoā Māori from the bill is what we've done to make sure that we can look after those that who do practice rongoā in their communities, wherever it might be in Aotearoa, can still provide rongoā services and rongoā for their whānau, for their hapū, for their iwi, and even down at the local market. We're quite clear that that's mana motuhake in rongoā. Where there are a couple of challenges is the first one, when people look towards exporting rongoā, and let's be very clear, many won't understand that actually there are many organisations who are looking towards the commercialisation of rongoā Māori and exporting rongoā Māori and leveraging off what is the clean green brand of Aotearoa New Zealand. We're saying that actually you can't export directly overseas without coming through the regulation process, and that's not only to protect rongoā Māori, but also to make sure that for those who do wish to export, you've got to come through the regulation process in order for those things to be received offshore anyway. Everyone who exports knows that you've got to meet the regulations at the other end as well. So that's the first one. The second one here is to say that, well, it's all fair and well if you're a small local producer of rongoā, and I know many of them are my relations who you and the team at Wātea have spoken to, Dale, like the likes of my uncle Matua, Matua Tohe Ashby and others. What we're saying is that's fine. E pai ana, haere tunu ngā mahi, that doesn't change. It's for those that look to large mass production of rongoā, and that's where you start looking towards, well, what does that mean for commercial use of rongoā? And what we know, for example, is there are a number of non-Māori pharmaceutical companies who are looking towards putting kawakawa in their product and calling it rongoā. Well, what we're saying is that's not good enough. You can't short-circuit the process by just claiming that you've got rongoā in your product. And we want to make sure that we can stop that from happening, which is why we're proposing to have a taumata that says, no, you can't do that, and is the arbitrator on such decisions. So, look, I think actually the bill's stronger in protecting rongoā while also allowing rongoā practitioners, and I want to be very clear too, rongoā rākau, because we know rongoā includes wairua, miri, so many other parts. Rongoā rākau, if anything, is more protected now under this bill by us taking it out.
Tēnā koe, thanks for sharing some kōrero with us. Just finally, wrap us up about this Wairihi Ngāti Whakaue Wellness Resort. I've taken offence to being charged $26 to have a swim down in Rotorua, so don't. I wonder who this one is aimed at and how much the government stumped up to assist with the development, Penny.
Yeah, look, Ngāti Whakaue went into a partnership as they had land returned to them down on the lakefront in Rotorua. And they worked hard with their iwi to get them across the line on the kaupapa for the same reasons that you just mentioned. You know, the thought of being priced out of paradise isn't something that sits well with our whānau. So Ngāti Whakaue did the work with their whānau. They've managed to secure a really strong partnership. What it's done is not only provide employment and a whole heap of other opportunities to tell the story of Te Arawa and Ngāti Whakaue, what it's also done is had a clear aim at the rather lucrative market of wellness tourism, which is about people who come here for the unique experiences that places like Rotorua and other places can provide. We know there are healing healing factors or you know, a wellness to be found in the geysers and in the mud pools and in the water that is down there. And so they've managed to capitalize on that and came up with a partnership across their asset holdings as well as a private partnership. And the government stumped up a fair amount of money too to support that particular kaupapa as it aims not just towards Wairiki itself, but what the offering is right across Rotorua. And I know Whakaue have ambitious plans to look towards building accommodation that's run by them and owned by them in the same area. And Wairiki is one of those steps in realizing that dream and ambition. And, you know, if anyone needed any convincing about whether or not this is the right way to go, yesterday there was well over 300 people at that opening, and many of them were the local whānau, who were really excited about seeing what potential that this particular kaupapa can bring to Ngāti Whakaue and Te Arawa, more broadly speaking. So we'll keep an eye on that, and I encourage all of those whānau who have any questions to go and engage with the team at Ngāti Whakaue and see what really is quite a special offering.